Well, great big welcome to everyone for our MVA course, Building Blocks and Services of the SharePoint Platform. So what we're going to talk about in this first module, there's 8 modules in the course, but we decided to start real big and to introduce the advanced workflow scenarios and then get into 7 other topics as the modules go through.
I think it's important that we start with workflow. We have to have an organization of our process before we run through the whole course, right?
I guess that makes some sense. You need to get your ducks in a row. And to get our ducks in a row, who are we? My name is Ted Pattison. I am with a training company named Critical Path Training. We specialize in SharePoint and Office 365 training. We have lots of good educational services and training classes, you know, and I work with Andrew and Scott Hiller, who's going to be here later. And we basically just love education, which is why we're here today. How about you?
Yeah, so my name is Andrew Connell. I'm an MVP for SharePoint Server. I've been doing this for about a decade or so. I'm a contributor to numerous articles and books on SharePoint development and related technologies. As Ted said, I also teach with Ted at Critical Path Training as a hands-on instructor. And then I also have a bunch of video-based training with a company called Pluralsight. You can find some of my information there on the slide, just andrewconnell.com on both the site and on Twitter as well. Yep. So in this first module, we're going to dive into looking at advanced workflow scenarios with Office 365. But really, the specifics of what we're going to look at is, I'm going to do a quick little introduction to kind of set the stage of where are we with workflow. Then I'm going to dive into what are the different tools we have available to us, what are actions and activities, different types of workflows that we can build. And then how can we start to do things like do some value add on top of the workflow platform? Like how do you work with tasks and forms and how can we call web services? Something that's really important in this version. And then finally, we'll talk about how to have some custom forms embedded within our workflow. But before we dive in and start talking about this stuff, I think it's important to have a kind of an idea and a vision of like what are we trying to accomplish with all of this content that we have in this course. So, Ted, why don't you talk us a little bit about the vision?
Well, certainly this is not the first MBA course that the team has been working on. We've been trying to build a curriculum that leads you through the best practices of basically building apps for the Office 365 environment. And the idea of extending Office Everywhere, you know, through your solutions and your apps, you know, is a central theme in this movement. Some of the earlier MBA courses concentrating on the Office 365 APIs have showed things like how to build connected services, how to talk to the Office 365 components via these new APIs, and basically just building a very open platform where maybe it's a web application, maybe it's a phone app. There's lots of different ways that you can build. So this course, we just basically want to look at another set of options that you have, and that is building SharePoint apps.
Yeah, so let's look a little bit about some of the building blocks that we have within SharePoint, and how does workflow fit into this? We've got lots of different pieces that make up the SharePoint platform, from lists to, and then how we interact with those lists using the REST and the CSOM APIs. And then we have additional services like managed metadata and search and BCS, and all of those things we're going to go through throughout the course of this course. But this piece that we're going to focus on in this module is around workflow. And the idea behind workflow is giving us a way to automate business process. So let me start to kind of dive in and explain, you know, what is workflow in the SharePoint platform? And then we'll look at a little bit of a why should you care about this as a SharePoint developer or as a custom app developer. So workflow is going to be used to automate business processes. So anything that says I need to collect some data from the user for this one context, I need to then take that and maybe assign some tasks associated with it. Maybe I need to go collect some information from some external system. And once I do that, I'm then going to have to do some other automated stuff and then do another one of those kinds of steps. Collect more information from the user, get more tasks that are going to be done for like an approval process. The idea behind workflow is to automate this process, to make it more repetitive, more predictable, and also to automate it so that people don't have to be so much involved in the paper pushing kind of aspects to it.
And remembering the different steps.
Exactly. That's people always drop the steps that are going to be there. Workflow was introduced to SharePoint in SharePoint 2007. It was updated in SharePoint 2010, but what you'll see in just a minute is that in 2013, we've had a very big change in the platform. The .NET Framework 3.5 Workflow Foundation was really the basis of workflow in SharePoint 2010, in SharePoint 2010. It still is included in SharePoint 2013, but strictly for backwards compatibility. So if you're a 2010 customer and you've built a workflow in SharePoint 2010 and you upgrade to 2013, it's going to work. Everything's going to work. You might not be able to play with all the cool toys that we're going to talk about in this module, but everything is still going to work because you're still working off the same platform. And we're in SharePoint 2013, Workflow is going to be outsourced, in a sense, to a new product called Workflow Manager 1.0. It's a product that we'll look at in just a minute. Now, the nice thing about this is that because it was a brand new product, it was built for both on-premises and for the cloud. So the nice thing is that with one tiny exception, every single thing that you do in Office 365 for your workflows in SharePoint will work the exact same in SharePoint on-prem. The only difference is one little characteristic about debugging and some extra information that we can get when we're using Visual Studio for the debugging. We can't do it right out of the box with Office 365 because we can't kind of hook straight into the workflow engine. There's a firewall in between. So there's one little extra step that you can do to say, oh, we'll make it so I can see that same data. So it's one little extra thing to see some debugging stuff. But for the most part, the platform is the same on-prem and in the cloud. So why should you care about this as a custom app developer? Well, again, you want to be able to automate process in your custom applications. That's the big thing. So, you know, you don't want to have a series of a ton of if-then loops and maybe having to have some loop that keeps checking to see if something has been completed, if it's a long-running process, if you're waiting for input from some external system or for a user. So it's really good for long-running processes. Another good use for this is that for people who are building apps that are more client-focused apps, more client-side focused. So be that like a SharePoint sandbox solution style application that doesn't have any server-side logic, or maybe somebody doing one of these new kind of single-page app type applications that uses one of these frameworks like Angular, which we look at in another MVA course. You don't want to have these long-running processes living inside of these client apps. Maybe you even have some IP that you want to be able to protect. It's a great option to bury that stuff inside of a workflow and deploy that because, as you'll see, our workflows are declarative solutions. And being able to use these workflows from our client apps, it allows us to hide some of that IP that the users won't be able to see if they were savvy enough to do a view source and read some JavaScript. But it also allows us to kind of hide where we're doing some things. If we're getting data from some web service, our workflow can do that on our behalf. So again, apps can leverage us to execute long-running processes, and then apps can also leverage the custom UI concepts or the out-of-the-box SharePoint UI concepts, like the task list, like forms and stuff like that, in this automated business process without you having to reinvent the wheel within your application. So let's first take a look at what this thing called Workflow Manager is and understand like how this works. Generally speaking, what this is that this is a new application, a new server-based application that is very scalable, that will work both the same way in the cloud and Microsoft Azure, as well as on-prem. So if you're an on-prem customer, you actually have to download this, install it, and get it configured and connect it to your SharePoint farm. If you're in Office 365, all that work is already done for you. You don't have to worry about it. His main job, though, is to be the service engine for all of your workflow tasks. So SharePoint no longer runs workflows internally if you're doing a SharePoint 2013 style workflow. Now, when I have a workflow that needs to get executed, SharePoint just simply hands it off to Workflow Manager, and Workflow Manager says, I got it from here, I'll do all the work. If you added an item to a list, and I know that there's 50 different workflow associations that want to be notified when the item was added or updated, Workflow Manager says, SharePoint, don't worry about that. I'll handle all that stuff on my own. And he spins up all the processes and does all the work outside the SharePoint process. That's a big benefit from what we used to do in SharePoint 2010, you know, Ted, as we saw everything was buried inside of SharePoint.
And it always ran the worker process, and it didn't take me to write very much bad code to bring down the whole farm if it was in the context of a workflow template.
Exactly. And you also said a key thing we're going to look at in this module here. You said writing bad code. We don't get to write code anymore. It's a kind of a good thing. It's kind of a challenging thing, but it's a good thing, I think that you'll see it's a good thing too.
A fully declarative model?
Fully declarative model, no managed code at all.
Tell me more, you've got my attention.
I'm not gonna hit build at all in this course. The other thing that we have too is that SharePoint 2013 is gonna talk to the Workflow Manager product, and it's going to have Workflow Manager is also gonna talk back to SharePoint using the SharePoint REST API and the Workflow Manager REST API. And it's going to authenticate and make sure that we both know who each other are, being SharePoint and Workflow Manager, using the OAuth protocol support that SharePoint has provided to us, and now supports in SharePoint 2013. I like to think of Workflow Manager as the first and the biggest customer of the SharePoint app model in a sense, because it really is leveraging all the same goodness that we have with Workflow Manager. Some of the good things too to think about with some of the improvements with Workflow Manager is that its job is to host the .NET Framework Foundation, Workflow Foundation that we get in the .NET Framework 4.5, so we get the latest and greatest tools. We're no longer coupled to what SharePoint supports. It's totally separate. We are going to have support in Workflow Manager for making calls to web services. This is something that we'll look at the end of this module. And it's what we're going to use to replace the ability of writing custom code that Ted just mentioned a second ago. Another thing that it's going to do is that Workflow Manager is much more transparent than what we had in SharePoint previously. Like I said before, Workflow was buried inside of SharePoint, and that's now no longer the case. Everything now is brought much more to the surface. Because it's all in Workflow Manager service with their own APIs. A couple more improvements, just real quick. I've already mentioned some of the full parity between the deployment types. We have a nice CSOM client-side object model and JavaScript object model that we can use to interface with Workflow Manager. We'll see that towards the end of the module. Forms, custom forms for our workflows, something that I've always thought has been incredibly challenging in SharePoint 2007 and in 2010, significantly easier in this version too. And then finally, we can actually include workflows within our SharePoint apps. And even so, that now we have this new concept that came along late in 2014, that we can have these things called integrated workflow apps that allow us to create a workflow app that will install the workflow not just in the app web, but in the host web, the parent of the app web. That's something that Office 365 supports now. So that's a really cool capability.
So you don't have to be the farm administrator to deploy your code anymore, like we've kind of been used to in the SharePoint 2010 days of Workflow.
Exactly. It's just a SharePoint app now. Workflow is part of an app. Now, you can include SharePoint workflows, 2013 workflows, and sandbox solutions. There's time and a place for that, but it all works great in apps. So let's take a minute now. Let's talk a little bit about some of the workflow authoring tools that we have available to us as developers. Well, the first one we want to look at is SharePoint Designer. So SharePoint Designer is still available to us. It's one of the big improvements that we got in SharePoint Designer 2013 was a revamped workflow design surface. It's really targeted for the power users and for the end users that are out there. And the reason for this is that all workflow development that you do with SharePoint Designer is all going to be done live against SharePoint. Nothing is like, you're not building like a developer instance of your workflow that you can package up and go take to another environment and deploy it. Everything is live what you're doing. So you don't get the real developer experience in a sense, but it's a great tool to create workflows by power users to get some work done, right? Developers that are looking at this and saying, well, hey, it might seem easier to build it with SharePoint Designer. A couple things you really should keep in mind here that I put on the slide is that you don't get any debugging. It's basically, what did you put in? Okay, the workflow's run. What came out? That's the extent of your debugging with SharePoint Designer. Again, it's not targeted to the developer experience. Another thing is that you can't connect SharePoint Designer to an app web. So any workflows that I've put inside of an app, I can't go through and customize them through SharePoint Designer. SharePoint Designer has no concept of what these things called SharePoint apps are. So I can't package up workflows. I can't create apps. I'm also limited in the kind and types of workflows I can create. Like I can't do these state machine workflows that we'll look at a little bit later on in this module. Visual Studio, on the other hand, there's your developer environment. This is going to support building workflows and packaging them up in SharePoint and SharePoint sandbox solutions, but more specifically with SharePoint apps and building these integrated workflow apps. It really facilitates building something inside of an artifact, taking that artifact, and then shipping it off to a QA instance of your SharePoint environment or a production instance or something like that. You get very rich debugging support. We'll look at a little bit of that as we go through the course. And we have support for creating custom workflow forms. That's not something you really have too much capability or flexibility in with SharePoint Designer. So we'll be able to create custom initiation forms and custom association forms. Now let me take a second and let me look at these things called activities and actions. And these are the real building blocks around workflows. So let me explain what these are for a second. Workflows are comprised of these things called activities. And you can think of it, if you've built like any kind of an ASP.NET website, you have things like a grid control or a input box or a repeater control. What those are reusable components that someone has gone through and they've built them out, and then they've boxed them up and put some public properties on them, and then put them in Visual Studio and on the platform to say, if you give me a enumerable collection and you set a couple other properties, I can write out a grid of data for you from this collection you gave me. You don't need to reinvent the wheel and creating a table every time. Activities and workflow work the same way. You want to send an email, tell me who it's going to, tell me who it's coming from, the subject, the body, and if there's any attachments, and I'll send it for you right through the SharePoint email infrastructure. You want to be able to grab data from a SharePoint list item. You tell me the list item, I can go to SharePoint, get that data, and give it back to you. So that's, we have these reusable components, these activities that have been defined. And it's not just in SharePoint. Activities are the fundamental concept down inside the workflow engine. So things like, if I want to have an if statement, it has figured out, it has the logic to say, give me a condition, and if that condition evaluates to true, take me down a true branch. Or if it doesn't, take me down a false branch. So all of those things, we get those with activities. What an action is an XML file that has created a little designer that SharePoint Designer can use to understand how to interact with these different activities. So an action then just translates an activity for use to SharePoint Designer, but and then in Visual Studio, we work directly with those activities. Some activities can contain child activities. So in the case of a sequence activity, he can have other children inside of him. Some of them, though, don't have that. Like the assign activity allows me to simply take an expression and assign it to a variable. We can't put other activities inside of those. Now, the nice thing, too, is that if you want to, you can even go in and create your own custom activities and deploy them to Workflow Manager for use within other workflows. So like if you say you want to go look at a web service to go grab some customer information, then you could just pass in that person's last name, and the activity would use the different activities that it had inside of it to go call things like call a web service and parse the response and cam back a response for the person you were looking for. Now, what are the different kinds of activities we have in Visual Studio? Well, we have a lot of different classes of activities here. And so there are some specific SharePoint activities, but then we get some other ones from the base SharePoint and workflow infrastructure and platform in .NET. So on the right-hand side of this slide, you see at the bottom that we have the workflow foundation activities. Then we have workflow activities that come from Workflow Manager. And then we have activities that come from SharePoint Server. So in the next few slides, I want to kind of blaze through them just really quickly, but they're really just for reference here. As you see here, we have a bunch of list activities. These list activities are things you're going to use for interacting with a SharePoint list. It's things like checking out, deleting things, adding things, getting the data, waiting for things to change, just common list-based stuff. Then you have things that we can work with about tasks and user activities or utilities. So assigning a task to someone, or sending an email to someone, or translating a document using the translation service that we have in SharePoint. All of those things, those are just a couple different classes of different utilities and stuff that are available to us. What do we get from the base workflow foundation? Well, some simple stuff. Write lines, that's kind of like the equivalent if you were doing a console app of like a console.WriteLine. It's a little debugging thing. The assign activity, I mentioned that a minute ago. The control flow sequence flow chart state machine, we'll look at all of those in a demo in just a few minutes. And then we also have some core control things, while loops, if statements, for each, common stuff that you would want to do. And then finally, Workflow Manager is giving us a bunch of activities as well. The two big ones, or there's, I guess, two different classifications of them. One is the core stuff. So you have things like the set user status. That's going to allow us to change the status of a workflow in a user-friendly way so that when the users go to our workflow status page, they can see, oh, here's where we are in my business process. I can't show you a picture, but I can at least tell you where we are. And I can put like maybe step one, step two, step three, stuff like that. The other class of activities we have are web service related activities. And these are the really new ones that we didn't have in SharePoint 2010, the ones that everyone was asking for. And this is giving us the ability to call out to preferably a RESTful web service or an OData based web service, and interact with it using JSON payloads, using the JavaScript object notation, submitting data to it, using it as a JSON object, or getting it back and then parsing through it using these objects called dynamic values. And Ted, you talked a little bit earlier. You said, you know, writing, that's where I wrote my custom code, was in Visual Studio-based activities or Visual Studio-based workflows. This is really where this is going to replace that need, is using web services.
So I can't write any code that's going to run inside of the workflow manager, and the best I can do is to use some of these activities to call my custom web service, and then I can put whatever logic I want behind my custom web service that runs somewhere other than SharePoint, somewhere other than workflow manager.
That's true, and that's exactly how it's going to work. You're really going to put the all of your custom code is going to now live in an external web service. I personally am a huge fan of this because I don't have to know how the workflow API works anymore. I can just write a standard web service, has a standard endpoints to it. I can secure it however I want to secure it, and then I can call it from my SharePoint workflow, and I'm off to the races. And the best bet is that logic is no longer buried in a workflow, it's in a web service, so some other application could leverage it as well in my organization. Okay, so let's take a second and let's look at the different kinds of workflows that we can create before we start to actually create some of these workflows. So there's three different types of workflows that are supported in Visual Studio and workflow in SharePoint 2013. The first one is a sequential workflow. It's exactly what it sounds like. You're going to go through a prescribed path. Now, technically, it may not ever end. You may, well, intentionally, of course, we've all written workflows that don't ever end, and you're like, well, how do I get out of this? I've never done that. I don't know if you've done that, but I'm sure somebody else has done that before.
Do while true.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a great way to test stuff, right? That's how we did workflow before we had workflow, though.
That's right.
So a sequential workflow has a prescribed path. You're going to start in one place. You're going to go straight through this path. You may go through a loop. You may go through an if statement. You may stay in a loop at the very end, but you're in a prescribed path. A flowchart is, you can think of it as kind of a little helper to a sequential workflow. It's going to allow us to do things like coming into this one place and then having a decision tree. You're either going to go down this flow or that flow, or kind of like how we have in C sharp, we have a switch statement or a case statement to where I can say, here's all the different places. What's the value of this one color? Is it red, blue, green, yellow? Well, I'll send you down these different paths based on what that value is. But the one that's really the big guy on the block here, that's going to be the state machine workflow. And that's going to allow you, it's going to give you the most power, but it's also one of the more complicated things that you have to learn and figure out. But once you really grok it, and once you understand what this is, you're kind of like, I can really automate, really model my business process a lot better with a state machine.
Macho, yet intellectual.
Exactly, yes.
And one thing, you know, I look back to 2010, and I would equate either sequential or state machine workflow in earlier versions of Visual Studio, but now you don't really pick a template type. It's really more about, once you get your design surface, what you put on it switches the type of workflow that you're talking about. So that's a little bit new to people.
That's true. Yeah, it makes it, it's actually a much better story, I think, too, for people, because you don't have this starting point that you have to feel like, if I don't pick the right thing, I'm going down that creek, right, that I don't want to go down. I want to go down this other path instead. Now we just start with a workflow. It gives you a sequence out of the box, but if you don't want to use it, you can delete it and then drop a state machine on there and poof, you're off to the races. And we can even nest state machines inside of sequences or nest sequences inside of state machines. That's what I did in the demo that we'll see in a little bit. So I talked a little bit here about what a sequential or a procedural workflow is. Prescribed path, they may or may not have loops and branches, but it's a pretty predictable thing. It's the basic one you see most demos are based on, and we'll have one that we'll do in just a minute. There's some advantages and disadvantages to them. In my mind, some of the advantages to the sequential workflows is they're crazy simple to create. They are very easy to model these things using Visio. Now, there's no integration with the workflow in Visio in Visual Studio, but it's very easy to model something like that in like Visio or a modeling diagram like that. And it's also very good for predetermined tasks. If you have a very specific way of how something works and it doesn't deviate from that, sequential workflows, fantastic option. Some disadvantages, though, to them is that you're really limited on how complex they can get. I mean, you've got a prescribed path and you can't really deviate off of that. And if you try to, it's kind of like trying to take a sedan and driving off-road mountain roading and stuff like that when you really need a 4x4 vehicle. It's not really designed to do that. There's tools that are designed for that. It's also not very ideal for in a very event-driven kind of business process. That's where, in my opinion, state machine is going to come into play a lot more, because I would transition from one state to another state based on external conditions that happen. Again, let's look at a flowchart for a half second here. So a flow chart, what is this? It's going to be give us a way to choose between different paths. So once I drop a flow chart in, I can choose a decision or a switch. A decision is basically an if statement. A switch is if I want to go with multiple different options. Flowcharts can live within sequential, or they can even live within sequence workflows, and you can have state machine workflows inside of my flowchart workflows, or it can even have sequences live inside of them. All these different types are really, you can mission mash them together. You generally start with one piece and you kind of stay in that one piece, but you can mission mash them together and just kind of create your own, whatever you want the soup to look like, you can do whatever you want. Some pros and cons associated with the flowchart workflows. Well, the pros, it adds flexibility to the modeling and the decision process, and it also gives you a little bit extra decision trees and options to be able to model those things out. Some of the disadvantages, though, again, not ideal for event-driven workflows or more flexible reactive style workflows. Last one I want to touch on here, state machine. These guys are going to use different kinds of states to define the different place we are within our workflow. So think about an e-commerce system. The order has been submitted. So we're in an order submitted process. And there's some things that need to happen in here. Check if it's in stock, pre-authorize the credit card, all those kinds of things. And if it's not in stock, then I want to transition out of the order processing over to the on back order. And then maybe there's things like notify the warehouse manager, notify the supplier that we need more, notify the customer it's on back order. But once it comes back to being in stock, I'm going to transition from the on back order down to in stock, or from the original order, if it was already in stock, I transition to in stock. But you can see that where I'm going in the states, it depends on the different external conditions on how I transition between them. And I define these different transitions in the modeling designer that we have in Visual Studio. Now, some of the components associated with a state machine workflow, you have a state machine activity. You have a state activity, a final state activity, which is kind of where you would indicate to SharePoint that the workflow is finished. And then you have these transitions that get you from state to state or from state to final state. The state activity has both an entry and an exit. And so you can actually do little mini workflows inside of those. So when someone comes into the on back order state, I have a workflow that'll say, go send an email, go call this web service, go do this, go do that. When I leave the state, same thing. I have different things that can happen, right? With the final state activity, obviously I never leave the final state, so I have no exit. That's it. That's the last thing that's going to happen. Transitions have three components to them. There's a trigger, a condition, and an action. The trigger says, what kicks this off? It may be a delay, it may be an event, something like that, but how do I get from, when I'm in this state, what's going to cause this transition to get triggered to take me from that state over to another one? The condition says, well, only under these conditions should this transition actually fire. So even though the trigger was fired, let's make sure that this condition is going to be met for this to continue down that, to go to that next state. And then finally, the action is, do I want to do a little mini workflow in the process of this transition? You have a place to do that as well. Some pros and cons to this, to the state machines. So for the pros, well, they're very flexible and they're very easy to add new conditions to transition from one state to another. I find them to be very flexible once I've developed and deployed a workflow for my customer. When they say, but there's one more thing. Very easy to go through and add in that extra stuff. Hard to do that with the other ones. It also easily allows you to model real world business process. I find it to be much easier to do that. It's also ideal when there's a lot of human interaction, because sometimes people don't respond in the way that you would expect them to respond. And so I can transition based and move them around based on how things happen. The downsides to these is that they can get complex. If you don't really have your brain wrapped around with how this stuff works, then it can be a little hard looking at the designer to say, how is this thing even working? Hopefully I'll make it a little bit easier when we look at the demo.
And I guess kind of the more you've been around the block knowing when to add states and not just to add states for everything and all of a sudden you have so many states.
Yep.
I think that's something that there's a coming of age to after your first project to know that, you know, create a state only when it makes sense.
I would fully agree to that. I mean, in the fact, it's very much a thing that you want to, you probably want to take a step back when you're looking with your customer and figuring out what are we building the workflow on, and you really, it's a whiteboarding session. Let's model out what this is and let's figure out the process and let's group this thing into, okay, we're really in this state when we're doing all these things, and then we're in this state when we're doing all these things. You want to take the time to figure that stuff out ahead of time. Some of the other disadvantages associated with these is that there can be a little bit of troubleshooting and trying to figure out when there's a problem. Where are you within the workflow? That can take a little bit of time. Some good, you know, write line activities and stuff like that will help you with that quite a bit. It's also not very ideal for ordered steps. I mean, I would argue that if you're going to be building a workflow that has five states in it, and it really is just five states transitioning from state one to two to three to four to five, I don't.
So
why are you?
You're adding complexity without payback.
Exactly. Now you're buying this great big, you know, semi tractor trailer to go on your road trip with your family, when really all you need is the trunk of your sedan, right? So you don't need all that. Okay. So before we go further, let's talk a little bit about calling web service. This is a little important topic here, and you really need to understand this as far as workflow development goes. So, again, we've said that when you have some custom business logic, you don't want to put that custom business logic inside of your workflow. In fact, you can't. There's no way to do it anymore. And you want to take that stuff, refactor it out, and put it inside of a web service. I would recommend that you build a web service that is a RESTful service, ideally one that's using OData, but that really is up to you. It understands JSON submissions and JSON responses. To be able to read and write these JSON responses, Microsoft has introduced a new data type. This data type is called the dynamic value, and it understands how to create and parse hierarchical data structures, which is like what JSON's going to give us or XML's going to give us, is a hierarchical data structure. And you have to know a little way of going through and parsing that in a declarative way. We'll show you that in the demo in just a minute. One thing that's interesting, though, about this is that, remember from the beginning of this module, I said that SharePoint and Workflow Manager are two separate products. There's nothing that's really between them except for a network. So when Workflow Manager, when your workflow is running in Workflow Manager and it needs to get data from a SharePoint list, it's got to go over to SharePoint to get that data from the list using the REST API, authenticated using OAuth, to get that data back. What Microsoft had to do is recreate all of those workflow activities that we had, that we used in SharePoint, to be really ones that call web services under the covers. So that's one thing that we really want to get used to. When we get data back from SharePoint, it's always going to be giving us that data back in a dynamic value. So we have to know how to parse those. If you're going to build custom web services for your workflows, and these are just my recommendations, but it's really up to you. You can create OData services using the WCF Data Services. It's a product by Microsoft in the .NET framework. It implements the OData spec. You can also write a custom OData service on your own. You could write a custom RESTful service. Doesn't matter what the infrastructure is, doesn't matter what the languages you write it on or where you host it. As long as it's internet accessible, we're good. If you want to secure these, there's a couple different options. It gets a little bit into too much depth to kind of dive into that in this module, but you can use basic authentication or you can use OAuth 2. That's two different options available to us. Okay, enough of this. Let's actually see a demo of actually seeing a workflow in action. So I'm going to flip over to my virtual machine here, and I've got a Office 365 developer site here that I've already got a workflow created and deployed. So let's see this thing work in action, and then I'm going to go back and show you the actual workflow. So what I have here is an app that I've created here called the Update List Item. Now what this workflow is going to do is it's going to call out to a web service once I put somebody's name in this list, and it's going to try and fetch more information about that user. So, live demo against a live web service. Let's hope that the demo gods are friendly to us. I'm going to type in Paula Wilson, who's a sample user here in this external service, and I'm just going to hit save. Now, once I've done that, I configured this workflow to not start automatically. So I'm going to go back over and I'm going to start the workflow manually. So I'll come over here to workflows for this one list item. And it's going to show me all the workflows that are available to me on this list. So I'm going to choose this workflow right here to start this workflow, and it's going to get started. Now, as it starts, it takes a second for the guy to get going. Let's see if we can get back over to the workflow status page by going back to the workflows page, and then let's find the running instance that you see here, it started, and let's see what's going on with this workflow. So what you can see here is down here at the bottom, we can see that we're calling this web service here to go find Paula Wilson. And so there's the OData query that my workflow has actually crafted. If I refresh this page, we'll see in the history list down here a little bit farther that it actually found Paula. It then had to go back. The way this web service works is that once you find them, you have to then go in and say, give me the details for this person. So it was kind of a handshake, and then now give me the data now that I know that there's somebody there. You can see here that I'm now pulling this person. They have an ID of 0 in this list. And then I went back and said, now that I got the data, I updated the items in the SharePoint list. Let's go back and see if that's true. Well, our workflow says it's completed. So let's come back over to Paula Wilson, the list item that we created. And poof, we can see a bunch of information here about Paula. All right, let's see how that worked. If I come over here to Visual Studio and go over here to my update list item workflow, here's Visual Studio. What I've done is I've created a very simple SharePoint hosted app, right? So it's a very SharePoint app using the SharePoint hosted model. I then went in, the very first thing I did is I created a SharePoint list. So you see here, I have a list here called sales leads. And in another module that we'll see in this course, Ted's gonna talk about how we can create lists and stuff using Visual Studio. And here I'll just save a little bit of time here and just say, I've gone in creating a list, and you see here's a bunch of the fields that I've defined here on this side with a name, an age, a street address, and so forth. Now, one of the things that I like to do when I'm building and testing my workflows is that when I start the app, I like to go straight to the list where I'm gonna go test my workflow. So one of the things that I do is I go into my app manifest, and then I change the startup page for my workflow to be the startup page for my workflow right here, or for my list. So you see I'm going to the update list item, that's the name of the app, going to the /list/sales leads. I can get that by coming over to my actual list and opening up the elements XML and finding the, where is it?
I think it's the inner.
Oh, that's right, it's the inner one.
More.
That was my template, and then let's go to my instance that was created. And of course I get the great, everything on one line, but there we can see there's the URL right there, URL sales leads. So that's when I'm going to the page, I'm getting straight there. All right, so we've seen how we're getting to the workflow. Let's actually see the workflow itself. So what I did is I went there and I created a workflow. I just went file, I went to my project here and I said file, add new item. So add a new item, and then I chose the workflow template that's available to us, which is right here, okay? And I gave it a name and asked me a few questions. Do you want to automatically associate with the list? I said yes, just for debugging and stuff like that. So here's the workflow. Let's kind of pick through it a little bit. There's a few different top-level sequences that I've created here that you can see for the different steps. So first, what I've done is we get this default sequence. You can always see what activity I'm looking at here by looking in the property window over here, and you can see the name of the activity. I've just renamed it here because as I get deeper into these workflows, if you look up here in the top left corner, see where it says workflow? If I click into one of these, you'll see that I'm actually getting a little breadcrumb to get back to where I was. Trust me, once you start adding a lot of sequences, because you see here's a sequence right here, you don't want this to say workflow, sequence, 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 sequence. That doesn't really, it's not a very helpful breadcrumb other than know that you're nested quite deep in an area of confusion. So here, what I'm gonna do, let's look at this first sequence right here. So what I've done is I've added in a few activities. I first wanna go find the person's name that was entered in the list. I then need to extract that value and get that actual name. And then I want to go write that out to the history list because you saw at the bottom, we saw that written out. So here I'm using an activity called the SP lookup list item. Let me just make this property window a little bit bigger here. And with this, I specified that I want to look in the current list. This workflow is tied to my sales leads list, so I don't have to worry about telling it go to sales leads. It says I know what I'm associated with. It knows what item was actually kicking the workflow off, so I can say go to the current item. And then I said, take the result and put it in this thing right here. So what is this person list item properties? If I come down here and click on this little variables tab, what you'll see is a bunch of variables that I've defined. And one of them is this person list item, person list item properties. This is of type dynamic value. Now to create this guy, all I did, this is blank at the beginning, but I went in to create a variable, I gave it a name, and then over here I picked the type. And dynamic value is not usually shown here by default. It is now because it's already in my workflow. But what I'm gonna do is jump over to browse for types, and I could type in dynamic, and you'll see here there's dynamic value, and so I could select it that way. Well, what I did here, this dynamic value, this is that JSON response that's coming back. I need to take that response and I need to put it in something that I can actually parse. So once I did that in this step right here, let's hide this to get some more room, I then need to extract that value. So here I've gone through, I've got my list item properties that we just got, and I'm gonna say on the view properties, that's coming out using this dictionary piece right here. I'm using this get OData properties, which is actually a get dynamic value properties, get dynamic value properties. And when you check off this OData data source, the data type switches over to get OData properties. So how does this work? Well, from here, I was able to tell it what kind of data I was pulling from. It knows it's a SharePoint list. So I'm saying pull from this list. It gave me a list of all the different fields in that list, and I can assign it to a variable called person name, which has also been defined down here as a variable that we can see right, person name right there. Notice I have this scope set to root, so he'll be available globally to all of these other sequences that I have defined. Okay, so let's dive in. How did I actually create the web service, or how did I call the web service? I didn't create it. This is an out-of-the-box one already. So inside of here, what I'm going to do is I'm going to craft an OData query. So how do I do that? I'm using an assign activity to assign to a variable called web service query, and that's using this web service URI variable that I defined at the very beginning. Again, that's just to save time. That's a variable that I defined with a default value of the root of the web service I'm going to. And then I just built the rest of the string for the query that I need to do. So here I'm making a query against the web service. I'm looking at the person's entity set. I'm using a select operator to say I'm only looking for the ID, filter out for the, where the name equals Paula Wilson. I then need to go make that call. So here I'm just logging it out to the history list so we saw the query a minute ago. And then I'm gonna execute that query. So I come down here, I'm executing the query. Here's the query that we're executing right there, the web service query that we defined a minute ago. This is an HTTP GET that I'm issuing. And I need to get the response back in this web service response. Now with this one, this is another dynamic value variable that I created. But in this one, that when I pull this one back, if we look at the next one of this piece here of getting the number of items in this query, here's another one of the activities that is available to us for dynamic values. This one's gonna check to see how many came back. So it's taking that value that came back and it's sticking it inside of this count. And down here inside of this other, this is an if statement. I check to see, was the person found? So if the count is not equal to zero, don't do anything. Just leave the item as is. But if you did find it, let's extract the person out. And I'm doing that using this other attribute calling get dynamic value property of type T. You can see here I said it was a string. And I'm putting in, you see this little query I'm having to put in. You have to have some understanding of what the query or the structure of the JSON looks like that comes back from your web service so that you can write a query that knows how to parse that value out. So with this one, the standard OData service is gonna say D/, then there's a results collection, look at the first thing that came back, which is the only item for us, and then ID, okay, to get that value out.
Kind of like an XPath expression for OData results.
Exactly. So here I get the value out in this result. And then if I just back up a little bit more, I'm then going in and updating the list item. I'm gonna have to go back, create another query. I'm gonna execute that query to go get the person that all their details, and then extract the response. And then over here, I'm gonna update the list item. And in this case here, when I extracted all these different values, I stuck each one of those values here inside of these different variables. In this case though, I didn't know the data type that it came back from. It was coming from some third-party web service. So Visual Studio doesn't know anything about it. So I have to put the path in here as like D/age or D/address/street. And that's how the nested hierarchy works. Last step then was just to update the list item. So in here, I said update the list item. What is it? This list and this item. I'll then click on the builder. And again, a similar kind of a thing. Set the, actually it always forgets this, but if I go back and say list item of sales leads, I didn't mean to do that. Let's see, hopefully we didn't save our changes. There we go. So list item of sales leads, don't remove them. And then here's all the different fields. You get nice little wizard dropdown effect because it knows the things in my list. And then I just set them to my variables. Poof, my workflow works. So that's a very simple sequential workflow. Let me jump back to the slides for a brief minute before I show you a state machine workflow. So I want to talk a little bit about tasks and forms real briefly before you show you the next workflow. So workflow tasks, this is going to add a human element to workflow in SharePoint. It can be assigned to a person, a group, multiple people. Nice thing is when the task gets assigned, they receive an email. They get an automatic reminder. You can set up things like if they don't respond within 3 days to the task, you can elevate it and take it to another, assign it to another person. There's an escalation process, all these different things. The one thing to keep in mind here is that, you know, when you create a workflow association, you want to associate the task list to the workflow definition to make sure that any workflows that are created, any tasks that are created, they're going to be associated with that definition. So generally, this is not something you really have to do. Visual Studio does it for you. If you do custom ones, though, then it's something you want to think about. How do you create custom tasks? Well, it's very different from what we did in SharePoint 2010, but just as a high-level overview, all tasks are based on this new content type called the workflow task parentheses SharePoint 2013. You create a new content type that derives from this one, and then you want to make sure that you add your custom site columns you want to add to it, as we'll see how to do that in another module in this course. You don't create a custom form for this. You use the out-of-the-box task form to show your tasks. And the task activities, you tell it that you want to use this specific content type. You do have to remember, though, that you want to add, when you create your task list, you have to add the association of that new content type to the task list. Otherwise, when it tries to create the task in the workflow, you'll see a failure in just saying, I can't find the content type. You can't create a new content, an element for a content type in a list if that content type has not been associated with said list.
Okay, so I still work with content types and maybe site columns, but the whole business of me creating the UI and, like we did before, deciding between .aspx or InfoPath forms, all that is gone.
All that's gone, yeah.
That's great.
It's much simpler, much more streamlined.
Good riddance.
Yep. I've got a little more information here about the task content type. We're not going to dwell too much on this. It's good reference information here. But before we dive into workflow forms, we need to look at a little bit about the workflow CSOM, just a very brief bit. What Microsoft did is they created a CSOM implementation of the new workflow API. What this is really going to give us the ability to do is to have workflow forms that are 100% client-side and interface with the workflow engine, but doing it all from client script. I'll show you how that works in just a second. It makes the creation of workflow forms for association initiation forms just so much simpler than it was before. It was so painful before. Now it's a piece of cake. So with that, let's look at workflow forms before we see the last demo. So one thing is, in the past, we could use InfoPath for building our forms. That's no longer the case. Now all forms are based on HTML. Say ASP.NET, but really it's HTML. There's some controls that are given to us out of the box, but for the most part, it's all HTML and JavaScript. They're going to be deployed using SharePoint solutions or with apps. The forms will communicate with SharePoint using the CSOM. So with the association form, they were going to stub out the code, and it will create the association for you and pass in your extra values you want from the form. For initiation form, it'll start the workflow and pass in those extra values. There's no custom stuff that you've got to really do, and you'll be surprised at how fast you can actually create a form when you see this. Now, two different kinds of forms, association forms and initiation forms. An association form is going to be shown after the SharePoint association form. So when you say, I want to associate the workflow with a SharePoint list, you go through all the stuff, give it a name, give it the definition, does it start automatically or manually, then it's going to show your custom form for you to collect some extra information. This form is responsible for creating the workflow history and task lists if they were indicated on the SharePoint form for the association, but don't worry, the code's already stubbed out for you. You don't have to worry about this stuff at all. Common use for association forms is when you want to set some default values in your workflows, or if you want to have any configuration information. So like maybe all approval requests should go to that guy. Now, initiation forms, those are shown right after I say start this workflow. And they'll auto-start the workflow. And if you have an auto-starting workflow, just keep one thing in mind. Your initiation form will get skipped, because if you're adding data from some other service, then if the workflow automatically starts, then there's no UI to take you to a form. So just keep that in mind if you're using initiation forms. You want to collect the workflow, common uses. You want to collect some instance-specific stuff, so maybe a comment, maybe some dollar amount, maybe a special message to include in tasks and email messages. That's where you'd want to use this. Okay, so for our last demo, let's take a look at state machine workflows and forms and tasks. Okay, so in the interest of time, I'm just gonna show you a little bit of just how this workflow is set up. And I did the same thing I did in the previous demo where I have a special list here called a create task. It's got some custom fields on it. We have right here. I have a trigger list. That's where all the tasks are being, that's where it's gonna trigger and get everything started from. So I have an init form value that'll be written out and then the outcome of the task that's assigned. And then I've also set my startup page here to be the trigger list. So let me go over here and let's look at the workflow itself. This is a state machine workflow. Looks a little confusing. It's actually pretty straightforward. The workflow will start right here at the starting point, and then we'll go into an initial state. So if I go into this initial state right here, I have an entry point and an exit point in transitions. So I'm not going to dwell too much on the aspects of all the different activities because that's really the same thing that I showed you from the previous demo. In the entry point here, I set a user status. This just lets the user know that we are collecting some initial values for our workflow. Nice little friendly message. And then I'm using a parallel activity to both go get some information about the user and to go update the list item with the values that were submitted from our initiation form that we'll look at in just a minute. In this case here with this state, there's no exit activity, but you see here I've got a transition down here at the very bottom. Now, instead of showing it to you from there, let me back up a bit, back up to the root, and let's look at our high-level view of this. What happens? Our workflow enters into initial state, which is basically going to collect some information, take the value from the initiation form, and update the list item. Then it creates a task. After it creates the task, when the task is complete, I will go down to the updating the list state, and then I will come out of the workflow completed part down to the final state. This is very much the workflow that I said don't create with a state machine workflow because this is quite sequential, but I'm using it just for demo purposes here so we don't get too complex. If we look here at this assigned task transition, I created this by just coming over here and it's kind of hard to see and it's kind of hard to actually show when we zoom in on the screen here, but you'll see these little boxes showing up on the left-hand side of the state. If I grab this and start dragging down, you'll see a little anchor pop up on this other one. That's creating a transition right here. It's giving a name of T1. You see I've got a little warning over here for this state, and that's because there's no kind of condition set on this guy. This one does have one. So if I open up the assigned task, this one there's no triggers, there's no condition. It just says, hey, look, when you're done with that previous state, immediately go right on into this transition, which will take you from the initial state down here to the create task. I can click on create task right here to jump straight to the create task state, which I've created a sequence called entry that'll go in, set the user status to say I'm assigning a task to the workflow initiator, and then I'm creating a task. Now the create task thing here on this configure piece, this configure tab here, allows me to create a task, and it looks like I'm having a little bit of a problem with the screen real estate here. Let's see if I can somehow grab this. Nope, can't change this, but we're not really missing too much here aside from just the way to cancel out of this dialog. You can see here I'm assigning it to the person that created the task. I'm doing that by their ID. There's the title of the task. There's the body. I can set up some options here. Wait for the task to complete. That's great. Remember, Ted, remember the last time when we were doing workflow tasks in SharePoint 2007 or 2010? You had to use those correlation tokens?
Yes.
They're gone. Now you just say, don't go anywhere until this is done. That's a big benefit.
Absolutely.
Configuration options here about sending emails, and then some outcome options that we have. There we go. Thankfully, escape got me out of that one as I didn't have my controls. And then you can just see I transition on to the next piece. Okay, so the last thing really to show you with this workflow here, you've seen how the states work, how the transitions work. Let me show you how the forms work. To create a new form with this, I would go to the workflow. Here's my workflow, create task, and I would say I want to add a new item. As long as I start with the context of a workflow, I have these two extra options here for creating an initiation or an association form. Now, when I do this, when I create one of these, what it will do is it will add in a new file into my pages folder. And in this case here, I'm using an initialization form. Now, you're gonna have to trust me on this one because in the interest of time, we're not building out the whole form. But all I did was just say, add the new form. I got this file right here. The only things that I have changed with this file is I scrolled down to the part where you see this little HTML table, and I simply changed the values that were inside this table to give it my own UI. Really, it was just, this is the only line I changed, it was line 28. Then you can see when it says click, when I start the workflow, it says start the workflow, and it's going to run this function. Now, this is going to do a whole lot of stuff, but the only thing you really care about is scrolling down to the part that says workflow params and modifying the code that you saw here that gets values out of the form and shoves them into this WF params array. And then the rest of the code here, I'll let you look at on your own. That's starting the workflow itself. So within the workflow, how do I actually get the value out that was submitted? Well, just keep in mind, I've got something here called the init form value. If we go back to my workflow, over here on the arguments tab, I have one called the init form workflow, or init form field value. That's treated just like a variable. So at the very beginning of my workflow, when I went in and I updated the list item, let's get rid of this. I'll scroll down, updating the list item right here. And if I look at the properties, there, I'm using that init form value that I had right there that we pulled in and was submitted in. So a bit of a fire hose here, but the state machine workflows are not very hard to set up here. It really is just dragging some of those activities in. The good thing here is that if you really want to dive into this, there's a lab associated with this module that creates both of the demos that I was showing you right here up on the Office Dev GitHub account in the training content. Just go find this module and you'll be able to get that demo and take a look at it. So let me go ahead and jump back to the slides and wrap up here. There's a bunch of resources that Microsoft has provided here for creating workflows. There's a developer center here that we can go for doing a bunch of stuff. That's all going to be at the dev.office.com. Shows you how to go get to all the different training options, code samples, patterns and practices, and links to all of the videos that we're seeing here. There's also on the Office blogs site for blogs.office.com, you can see things like announcements and events and the podcasts that have been released, all of these different pieces. Right. And then, again, we also have a roadmap that's associated with this Microsoft has published for Office 365. It's updated monthly. You can see things that have been launched, things that are currently under development, things that are rolling out, all of those different things here. These numbers are obviously not current because, you know, it's not. These numbers are much bigger. There's lots of stuff that they've launched here. So it's just a sample screenshot from very early on in the roadmap. Couple of things to talk about here, patterns and practices. The patterns and practices group has got a bunch of content to help you kind of get started on doing all things about Office 365 and SharePoint, including some workflow stuff. And again, we mentioned a little bit here about some content from GitHub. I definitely take a look at github.com/officedev. You'll find tons of content, tons of samples, as well as the training content repository where all of the MVA content is. For this module and all the other modules in the MVA courses associated with Office 365.
And the hands-on labs that all our viewers are going to dutifully work through.
Exactly. You're going to rush straight from this video and you're going to work on all these labs. It'd be a great thing, great way to get your experience. So this is the first course, in the first module in this course of the building blocks and SharePoint services and the platform.
We decided to start big with workflow, which we indeed did.
It's a lot to bite off.
That's right. So thank you for joining us for this first module, and hopefully you enjoyed that.